Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with six race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Deadline for late summer registration is September 22nd. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. And with me today, Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. Hello, Jeff.
Charity, how are you?
Great. Aaron Style is also here, assistant director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
Thank you both for being here today. And let's start with a question that I know, Jeff, you've gotten many, many times in your life. Is this a good time of year to plant a tree?
I thought you were going to start with these hats we're wearing.
I'll talk about those a little bit later.
All right, okay. All right.
But I'd like to see pictures. Right. All right, is this a good time of year to plant a tree, Jeff?
Well, you know, you've got to define your terms, and there are two words that we need to define right off the bat. Are we talking about planting something we bought at the garden center versus transplanting something that's already in the ground, we're going to cut its roots off and move it? So if we're talking about plants that you buy at the garden center, yeah, this is a great time. I like fall planting. Usually soil conditions are good. The soil temperatures are warm. There's good soil moisture. We've got a little ways to go before things freeze up. So I'm a big fan of fall planting. However, if we're talking about digging something out of the ground that has been growing there for a while, then that's a different conversation altogether. And there are some plants that you'd rather wait until they're dormant to do that. So I'll stop there and let Aaron weigh in here.
Yeah, there. I think especially trees and shrubs can be really good this time of year. The temperatures, especially in the soil, are warm, and that's all really, really great. The one thing you have to be careful of, though, is there's a lot of herbaceous perennials where this isn't a great time to plant them. I think of things like corybels that need some time to establish, otherwise they lift out of the ground over the winter and you see more die back or even lose the plant when you're not intending to. So when we're talking about fall planting, we're usually talking about actually late summer. And when we talk about fall planting, we're usually talking about woody plants.
Okay. And this is a time of year, you know, Jeff, you were saying it's a good time of year to plant some of the things that you get at the garden center.
Right.
Well, it's also a time of year where you find a lot of deals at garden center, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a good idea to take advantage of those deals?
Well, it's not the same as dumpster diving, but it's darn close. And you can get some really good deals at garden centers. Now, again, you don't want to sacrifice quality. You want to still look for quality plants. But yeah, a lot of sales are going on right now. And so therefore, you kind of throw caution to the wind and you say, well, what do I got to lose? But there are some plants, at least in my experience, that really struggle when they're installed in the fall, whether that be they're transplanted or bought from a garden center. And one that comes to mind is redbud. I love Eastern American redbud, but man, they struggle sometimes when you put them in the ground this time of the year. So in general, anything like that or that is marginally hardy for the region you live in, you might want to delay, even if it's a good deal. Wait until spring planting. But you're right, Charity, and I know you're out there with me looking for those special deals and garden centers all over the state. But also, I think Aaron just alluded to this, don't extend that fall season too late. I mean, you know, if you're out there on Christmas Eve, that's kind of late. So get them in the ground in September. October is good, even early November. But you'd like some root growth to occur before temperatures really hit, really nosedive.
All right, and when you get to the garden center, now a lot of these trees have been sitting in the pots all summer long. Do you need to do a health check before you decide even if that discounted price is a good idea?
Well, there's all kinds of things you're looking at. I mean, there's nothing wrong with knocking that tree or shrub out of its pot and looking at the root system, and I can bet that you're probably going to run into a lot of spiraling roots, a lot of pot-bound plants. Now, that's not a deal breaker always, but you're going to have to do some work before installation to kind of break those roots up. But I look at that. I look at the trunk. You don't want to buy trees that have been scuffed up and scarred. You don't want broken branches. And if we're talking trees, I like to see lower branches on trees. I hate to buy trees that are limbed up like lollipops. So, you know, none of our quality discussion goes away just because it's a good deal, because it's not a good deal if the plant languishes or dies. Because it was poor quality.
All right. So you get it home. Tell me, give me the ABCs of tree planting. We've talked about it before, but they all bear repeating. So you're looking for a good site. Sometimes when you make these impulse searches or these impulse purchases, you don't necessarily have that plan in mind, right?
Well, I'm probably the wrong one to be addressing this. If you saw my yard, you would just shake your head because I crowd things. I put things in where they don't belong. But let's do as I say and not as I do here.
All right.
But you want to take the long view. If you're buying a shade tree, is it going to fit the site? And does it get along with the soil conditions that you're dealing with? So all that aside, you better have that plant in the right site. And then I like to dig an oversized hole. That doesn't mean too deep. It means wide. And if you're dealing with soils like I have in my yard, the wider that hole, the better. Because I want that soil to be kind of broken up. I want to make it as easy as I can for new roots that escape that root ball to grow out into the backfill soil and eventually into the site soil. So if I'm digging a hole for a plant that's been in a container and that container is 12 inches wide, then I'd like a 36-inch wide hole or maybe even wider. And I want to make sure that I'm not planting too deeply, especially in a poorly drained soil. So we spend an awful lot of time digging that hole or preparing the site, because if we make a mistake there, then bad things happen.
All right, and what's wrong with the soil in your yard?
Well, a lot of new developments deal with heavy clay, heavy, poorly drained soils. You know, when they dug my foundation, my basement, they brought all that nasty soil up and spread it on top of the ground. And so this is not the same Iowa farm soil that we're used to seeing. And so if you're dealing with heavy clay, poorly drained soils, then it's imperative we don't plant too deeply, because those soils are poorly drained and you could easily kill a plant with too much water or too much moisture like we've had the last couple of days. And so a wide hole dug to the appropriate depth and get that plant in the right place in your yard. And, you know, you've done a lot of good things right there. And then, of course, you backfill with the soil that comes out of the hole, which is easier said than done sometimes. And so if the soil comes out of the hole in chunks, then you might have to cut it or use a small percentage of an organic compost, perhaps, back in with your backfill. You know, watering will be important, of course. Even in the fall, as it cools down, we want to make sure we're providing enough moisture for that plant as it grows new roots, because we're entering prime root growth development time. I mean, roots grow really well in the fall. And so we want to optimize root growth by adding water as needed. And then finally, the coup de grace, the crowning touch, of course, is mulch. And we've spent lots of time in this program talking about the benefits of an organic mulch over the planting area, 2 to 3 inches deep, and keep it off the trunk.
All right. Do you want to do anything in that hole? You want to add composted manure or anything like that when you're in that process?
I'm not a big fan of compost in general is okay. But if your soil is good, then there's no reason to use a lot of amendments. And we call those things amendments. But if the soil is poor, then something composted can be, you know, woven in with that clay soil that comes out of the hole. But other additives, things like vitamin B12 and root starter and fertilizer, I think are not wise things to use at the time of installation.
All right, so resist the upsell at the checkout line.
Well, and that's hard for me to say, because I used to manage garden centers, and of course that's a revenue stream. However, the research has proven that those things really don't increase your chance of success. They might give that plant a little bit of a shot in the arm, but it doesn't really increase your chance of success. So I usually wait a year before I fertilize.
All right. Now let's talk about watering, because you said you were entering prime root growth time. Water, of course, is key in that. So how much water, how often?
Yeah, the impossible question to answer is the one you've just posed, because because of the environmental conditions that are variable, not just in your yard, but across the state. So the old recommendation was an inch of water a week. Well, what does that mean? So remember, if you're dealing with a container grown plant, all the roots supporting that plant are confined to a very small area. So and that plant can dry out very quickly because of that. So you might have to water almost every day or every other day during the heat of the summer. You begin to taper that off as we go into fall. But if we planted things properly and the planting area drains pretty well, then you might have to water two or three times that first couple weeks it's in the ground.
All right. And you want to keep that going how long?
It depends on the weather, but through Thanksgiving or up to the Thanksgiving period, and then we usually can put away the garden hoses.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment with me, Jeff Isles, and Aaron Style. We're talking about your plants and trees today, and of course, we'll be taking your questions. You can give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number. You can also tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. With me, Jeff Isles, professor and chair of Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, and Aaron Style, assistant director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. And we are here to answer your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we already have people sharing their questions. This hour, of course, I have to toggle away from the screen I was on, but here we go. I've got a question for you guys. This one's from Anne Marie in Iowa City. My green ash tree has two problems. The leaves have patchy brown spots and are curling up and falling too soon. Normally, they turn yellow and don't curl in the fall. Last spring, some fresh green leaves fell off for a week or so, which you had mentioned on a past show. The tree gets regular injections for emerald ash borer. It is a younger tree, maybe 25 years old. Any ideas?
Well, in the spring of the year, you could always look to perhaps a fungal disease called anthracnose, but this time of the year, I'm going to probably blame it on our hot, dry summer weather. A lot of green ash will probably lose leaves and color up early this year. And if we, you know, if we forget about what's happened the last few days, we've had a lot of rain, but before that, it was pretty hot and dry for an extended period of time. And I'm guessing that the green ash is probably just suffering from that temporary drought stress. It's not a big deal. It doesn't look very good, and you might have some reduction in fall color display, but I'm guessing it's just a response to the hot, dry weather.
Okay, so this is not an end game.
Well, no, you know, emerald ash borer would be the end game, but it sounds like they're protecting the tree, so that's a good thing.
All right. Next question. This one is from Diane in Riverside. Pardon me. This summer, crews have been working on the street and sidewalks in our neighborhood. Apparently, in the process of pouring a new sidewalk and replacing the soil around it, they broke off a good-sized limb of our oak tree. This happened yesterday. The limb had no leaves on it and probably should have been pruned anyway, but I'm concerned because we've been careful only to have the oaks pruned in the winter to avoid oak wilt. Do you think this will hurt the tree?
Whoa, great question. And I know Vitosh is lurking out there, so I'm going to try to be on my P's and Q's.
He's always lurking.
So will it hurt the tree? I think she's asking, well, will this provide an entryway for
right.
beetles that might vector oak wilt? I don't know, maybe, but I don't know. I wouldn't worry too much about it. However, I would probably still delay pruning that branch until the tree is dormant. My guess is that the tree has already begun to wall off that area. And of course, they're going to want to take that branch off if it's just kind of dangling there. But I'd still delay until the dormant season.
All right. So cross your fingers, but you probably don't need to do anything right now.
Well, yeah, I don't want to sound the alarms here. I mean, things happen. I don't know how prevalent oak wilt is in that person's area. So sleep well at night. That's my advice.
All right, let's go to the phones. You can join us with your question, 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jim is on the line in Johnston. Hi, Jim.
Hello there.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I've created a wall of shade on the west side of my house with three ash trees. They're getting mature. The branches are interlacing. I'm wanting to know what I should do, if anything, about trimming those back to make sure the trees aren't working against each other, but I still want my wall of shade.
Yeah, I mean, trees touch all the time. They do fine. You may find that on some of the trees, certain branches will start to get shaded out, and you'll notice them kind of die back, and that's natural. If you're looking for a wall of shade, you don't really have to do anything unless those trees are actively like rubbing against each other. That in a way that could open up a wound on the branch. Otherwise,
all right.
Having them interlaced together actually is kind of nice, I think. So you don't really have to do anything.
That's great to hear. Yeah, that's the results I'm getting. I love what I've got, so I just didn't want to cause any more problems or create a problem.
Right.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot for your call. Always nice to share good news.
Yeah. That's what we're here for.
Right. Well, no, you're not. That's not true. Well,
that's what we want to be here for.
Right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. Lynn is on the line next in Iowa City. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. I have a question about my Fat Albert blue Colorado spruce trees that have the fungus. And they're about 25 feet tall. And should I just cut them down, or is there anything that they can be treated with?
Right. So Lynn, I'm assuming you're talking about some kind of a needle cast disease. They're dropping their needles?
Yeah, from the bottom up.
Right, right.
And it looks like the bark is flaking off, and there's some sticky substance underneath it.
Yeah. Fat Albert's a cool selection of Colorado spruce. It has that nice bright blue color, but they're not immune to a lot of the same diseases that Colorado spruce, just the straight species, has a problem with. So all is not lost. I mean, you could attempt to use fungicides in the spring of the year to get a handle on these fungal needle cast diseases. Now would not be the time to do that. These are generally applied in the spring of the year. And what they do is they protect the foliage that is coming out that year.
Uh-huh.
So you might investigate these needle cast diseases and find exactly the time of the year you'd want to apply the fungicide. Generally, there's two applications, and they're applied just as the plants are putting out their new growth, and then maybe 10 to 2 weeks later. So you could try that. Rhizosphera is the formal name of one of these diseases. It's a mouthful, but you might investigate that. If these are that large, you might have to have this done by a tree care company, because that's a tall order for a homeowner. But that would be a spring application. So I wouldn't throw in the towel.
How is it applied then? Is it sprayed on the trees,
yes,
or on the ground?
It's applied directly to the foliage as a liquid spray, and so you need equipment that gets to the top of the plant as well as to the bottom. Mm-hmm. So I would find a reputable tree care company or two in your area, get a couple quotes, and see what they can do for you.
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Lynn. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Pat's on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, Pat.
Hi,
what's your question?
I have a beauty of Moscow lilac bush that I planted 3 years ago, pretty much to the day, and it has not bloomed, and I'm wondering what I need to do to get it to bloom.
What types of conditions it is? Is it getting full sun? Is it part sun?
It gets pretty full sun.
Okay. If it's getting at least 6 hours of direct sunlight, like rays on leaves, then you have enough sun. One of the biggest culprits for lilacs not blooming is not enough sunlight. The other big culprit is just maturity. And it's not unusual to have a lilac go up to 4 or maybe even 5 years before its first bloom, especially if the plant was small. Or in your case, it sounds like you planted it in the fall. So it's really probably only had about 2 growing seasons instead of 3. I would give it a little bit more time. If you're getting into 5 or 6 years and you haven't seen any blooms on it, then there's something else going on. And usually that's not enough light, but it could be some other things too, including really unfavorable soil conditions and some other things like that. But lilac's a pretty tough plant. So it usually blooms pretty well, but it can take several years before it's mature enough to do that after planting.
Do I need to put any bone meal or any kind of fertilizer on it?
No, that's not going to kind of move it along if the maturity is an issue here, which it sounds like it is. So, and especially if you're already fertilizing your lawn, you are fertilizing that lilac too. So there's no need to add fertilizer.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Yes. Thanks a lot for your call, Pat. Next up, let's go to Ann, who's on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Ann.
Hello. I'm calling about arborvitae. I was wondering if you could tell me the kind that's fast growing and when to plant it.
So, Anne, arborvitae, I'm trying to think of any that would distinguish themselves as being exceptionally fast-growing. There's one that I have noticed that seems to clip it along at a pretty good rate. It's called Het's Wintergreen. And Aaron probably knows this because mm-hmm. there's some beauties down at the Ryman Gardens. But it's a bigger one. It gets to a pretty good size, and it's a little more open. It's not quite as formal as some of the arborvitae in the nursery trade. But it does seem to have a pretty good growth rate, and it's known for not showing any winter burn. A lot of times arborvitae will kind of burn up in the wintertime. So Het's Wintergreen is one that I've long admired. You got to give it some room because it's not a small little plant. And if you're going to find these in the nursery trade today, and you might have a hard time finding them this time of the year, they're going to be in containers, and so you can still plant them now. But your challenge might be finding them. I'm not quite sure who's going to have them this time of the year.
Oh, okay. Is there another one that you would recommend if I'm unable to locate this one?
Well, any others that you might find, and again, I hate to split hairs here. None of these things are fast growing. These are not silver maples. So the one that you're going to find in the trade this time of the year is one called Emerald. It's all over the place. You can find it at Lowe's. You can find it at independent garden centers. and so that one probably is easy to find. But and it's a bit more formal. It's nowhere near as open and informal as Het's Wintergreen.
Okay.
But it's a good one.
Can you tell me, we can plant them in the fall, but when is it best to plant them? Or does it matter?
I'm confident in you. You're from Iowa City. You know what's going on, Ann, over there. You can plant these in the heat of the summer as long as you get water to them. What I worry about is people that extend the fall planting season too late in the fall. We kind of talked about that a few minutes ago. So if you planted it in September, then I think you're in pretty good shape.
All right, Ann, thanks a lot for your call. Let's do an email question here from Kevin. How deep and wide do mature wisteria roots typically extend? I've buried utility lines marked, but I just want to allow plenty of room. Also, in general, are you a proponent in aggressively pruning shrubs early and often when they are young to produce a denser, mature plant? If so, how frequent and for how long a period do we prune this way?
Well,
so let's start with wisteria roots.
Yeah, with the wisteria. The bulk of the roots are going to be in the top 12 inches or so of the soil. And wisteria is an interesting one because it could, if it's really happy and given the space, it could spread out wider than you might think. But certainly, you know, when we talk about trees and even shrubs to a little bit of an extent, we always talk about the drip line, and the bulk of the roots are kind of just up to and just beyond the drip line. Wisteria doesn't really have a drip line, right? Because of the way that it grows. So it's really hard to say because the local soil conditions are going to play a huge role in this. If you have really good soils and lots of place for it to grow, I suspect wisteria will take advantage of that. If you have a pretty, like in a raised bed or a sidewalk or a driveway, something nearby, then obviously that's going to be a big barrier for those roots. So certainly 5 to 6 feet out once it's more on the mature side is likely, but wisteria is the kind of plant that would probably take advantage of even further out if it could.
All right, so let's talk about pruning shrubs.
Yeah, so I think it depends on the kind of shrub that we're talking about. You know, some shrubs like spirea and even ninebark and barberries, you can hack away at them. You can even cut them back all the way to the ground every couple of years, and they actually, some of them look better when you do that. And then other shrubs, I think like things like some of the viburnums or some that have more of a structured branching rather than just all these stems coming out of the ground, you wouldn't necessarily prune in that way. So certainly the best thing to do is to make sure you're starting with a shrub that's mature in size to where you want it to be, making sure that you're not buying something that's too big because that will be an eternal fight until the shrub is removed. So I don't do a lot of pruning on my shrubs early in their life. I let them do their thing. And then once they start getting in the way of something, hopefully they don't ever get in the way of something. Maybe that's when I would start to look at it. But it really depends a little bit on the kind of shrub it is. I don't know. What would you add to that, Jeff?
You know, we just talked a few minutes ago about a lilac that wasn't flowering. And one of the worst things you can do for a lilac is to cut it way back because then it won't flower. So it like Aaron says, you really have to tailor this to the plant in question.
All right. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Jeff Iles is professor and chair of the horticulture department at Iowa State University. Aaron Stile, assistant director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. And they will answer your questions if you give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon. October 19th and 20th, with six race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Deadline for late summer registration is September 22nd. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me today, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Jeff Iles, who is professor and chair of the horticulture department at Iowa State University. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Let's get back to the phones. Dennis is on the line in Polk City. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. I've got a Joe Pye weed, which is like 6 feet tall, and the butterflies just love it. But it's getting so big, it's in a place, and I want to move it to a different place.
Mm-hmm.
Can I move that this fall?
You'd probably be better served to wait until very early spring, just as it's coming up out of the ground. If you can wait until then, that would be the best time to do it.
Okay, and then hostas too, same thing?
You can move hosta this time of year. They look really rough the rest of the season when you move them this time of year. Hosta's a really tough plant, but I prefer to move them in the spring as well. Just as those little points come up out of the ground, it's a great time to divide them as well.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks.
I'll be patient and wait.
Thanks a lot for your call, Dennis. Next, let's go to Robin in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Robin.
Hi. And by the way, I am a sustaining member, and I cannot imagine my life without KU and I.
Oh,
and I
thanks,
mean that.
Robin. Thank you so much. What's your question?
I don't know how to sit without using the word delighted. I have been discovering in my gardens these fungi that are amazing. One, it was actually looked like a large rose. And I'd like to know who I can contact at the university to hopefully help me ID some of these amazing fungi that's growing around the place.
Yeah. To accurately identify a mushroom, they'll want a piece of it or a part of it. And you can go online at hortnews.extension.iastate.edu. And there's a spot there where you can contact, and you'll get to the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic. And they have a form there you can fill out that tells you how to collect and submit a fungi sample for identification. And there is a small fee associated with it, but
unreal.
It is there. What's that?
This particular fungus, I just can't believe it could actually form into this large, it looked like a rose, but a huge rose, and it's no longer, I mean, it's disintegrated now, but
well, and what you might be able to do is when it does pop back up again, there's likely still organic matter in the soil. If you do see it again, you can be poised then to collect a sample and send it in. I would say you could maybe submit photos, but it's really hard to accurately identify any fungi without actually seeing it and looking at it.
Well, Robin, thanks so much for your call. It sounds like that was a lot of fun this summer.
Yeah.
Let's go now to Fred on the line in Rhinebeck. Hi, Fred.
Hi, Fred.
Hello, Charity. How are you today?
Good. What's your question?
My question is, I have a large mature forsythia that I planted. Well, actually, it's three bushes that I planted to grow together to form a screen for a patio. Probably they're 12 years old or more. And now they've become so large and so wide that they're really in the way. And I don't know whether it's possible to aggressively prune them back or whether I just have to try to dig the plants up. They're almost impossible to kill. I'm sure your guests understand that. I've tried to do that to another one before, and that's a long process. Of course, perhaps I didn't know what I was doing, but in any event, what can I do to this mature forsythia?
Well, Fred, I think you can certainly try to corral it. The late dormant season would be my preferred time to get out there and start whacking away. So we're talking, you know, late February, early to mid-March. Pick a nice, warm, sunny day and get out there. And what you'd want to do, I think, is a combination of things. You might do some thinning. So I like to thin older canes right back to the crown of the plant, which opens the plant up and allows light to penetrate. And at the same time, you can do some heading back of really long shoots, long canes, and bring the plant back into a size that's more desirable. Now, there are some that will lose patience with that and just cut it off at the ground and start over. And forsythia, and Aaron alluded to this earlier in the hour, forsythia is one of those plants you can kind of abuse, and it will come back without batting an eye. I'm not quite that way. I would prefer to do more of a controlled pruning operation. So, but it's going to take some time, and you're going to probably need a handsaw, maybe some loppers, and a good pair of hand clippers to do this operation. So it's a combination of thinning it out and also heading it back to bring it into line. Does that sound doable, Fred?
Let me get Fred back so he can say that or not. Does that sound doable, Fred?
Yes. Thank you very much for the advice. I have a friend who has successfully thinned, actually not forsythia, but a yew. And it sounds very much like the same process you describe. Also, I have cut a mature forsythia right back to the ground, and boy, are you right. It comes back with a vengeance. And so I suppose if I got really impatient, I could just go ahead and try that. But I think I'd be game for experimenting and waiting for that sunny day and trying to, certainly it would take a saw. These are pretty tough old birds.
All right, it'll be a workout. Fred, thanks so much for your call. Let's talk next to David in Winthrop, Iowa. Hi, David.
Yes, good morning.
What's your question?
My wife and I operate at Timeless Prairie Orchard in Winthrop, and this late July, all of the flowering crab trees that we have around the orchard that provide pollination begin to lose their leaves, and they are right now almost have no leaves on them at all. And I'm wondering if the early losing of these leaves, what may have caused it, and is it going to affect their ability to bloom next fall?
So, David, do you know what crab apple selection we're dealing with here? Do you know? Do they have a name?
It's called Indian Summer.
Indian
flowering crab. Yeah.
That's a great selection. It came out of a nursery called Simpson Nursery in Vincennes, Indiana, named after a racehorse. But really a cool plant, nice pink flowers in the spring, really nice fruit display. But they are susceptible to a disease called apple scab. And apple scab will cause early defoliation, especially when environmental conditions are right. And we had those earlier this year. And so, yeah, it loses its leaves early, but it never seems to hurt the plant. And in a strange way, when the leaves are gone, you can fully appreciate the fruit display, which is quite spectacular this time of the year and into October. So undoubtedly, apple scab is the heart of the problem, and it's a fungal disease, and it can come back year after year, but it never seems to really hurt the plant.
All right. That's good news. David, thanks so much for your call. Let's do a few email questions here before we run out of time. This one's from Brad in Iowa Center. He says, my wife and I just finished building our dream acreage this summer. We've started a large garden. We've been canning for a few weeks now. Last month, I planted 20 apple trees of different varieties, Cortland, Zestar, Honeycrisp, Macintosh, etc., all semi-dwarf, I believe, plus a couple of crab apples for pollination. There is a total of 20 trees, four rows of five, planted 10 feet apart. I'm new to this and read to plant them 10 feet apart online, but now I've found out this may be too close together. Will I need to move them, or can I prune them so they can thrive this close together? If I need to move them, I'll have to put them in the back pasture away from the garden.
10 feet's pretty close for a semi-dwarf tree. And this is, I can understand where you would find this information, actually, because depending on what that rootstock is, what those apples are grafted to, 10 feet may be fine for a dwarf apple tree. But a semi-dwarf tree usually gets at least 15, if not 20 feet wide. And so 10 feet's probably a little close. And air circulation around apples is very important. We just talked about apple scab. There are a couple other diseases that can be really problematic on apples, and good air circulation can help mitigate some of that. So
how far apart would you plant them? Is this something where he should dig up every other tree, or what's...
You could potentially. 20 feet would probably be better for a semi-dwarf tree, maybe even just a little bit further apart to help with that air circulation. You don't want to crowd these trees.
Okay. Would 20 be sufficient so he doesn't have to dig
every single one? It would certainly be much better than the current situation.
Okay.
And it's always good to have these things together and close to your house so that you can harvest and all that stuff. But a good site selection and good spacing are going to be really important long term for the health of these apple trees.
All right. Here's our final question of the day from Tim in Indianola. I purchased chestnut seedlings this spring and I started them in pots. They are 18 inches tall and they're doing well, but I haven't decided where to plant them yet. What is the best way to winter over these trees until next spring?
Well, you want to protect the roots, so you can bring them into an unheated garage and maybe surround them with a little bale of straw or two. What I worry about the most, though, is predation. You don't want rabbits or anything chewing on them during the winter. So try to insulate the roots, whatever that means, and then maybe use some chicken wire to keep the varmints away from them as they overwinter. If we get snow cover, then that's the perfect insulator. But if we don't, then you need something else to kind of insulate those pots.
Okay, and I will squeeze in one more question. This one's from Ellen. Any suggestions for planting coral bells this fall? I have some growing in mixed decorative containers, and I was hoping to transplant them into my beds.
The short answer is no. Coral bell is one of the hardest ones to transplant in the fall. If you do decide you want to try to save them, I would make sure I put a nice layer of mulch, 3 or 4 inches of mulch after the ground freezes to help hold them in place over winter.
All right. See, you don't always give good news, Aaron.
Well, but we have a workaround.
Yes,
so we
absolutely.
Can try it.
Absolutely. Aaron Style, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Aaron Style, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Jeff Isles, thank you.
Thanks for the hat.
Enjoy it. You wear it beautifully.
I will.
Jeff Isles, he's professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. We'll be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa.